ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 2nd chapter, verses 16-34. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. When I think of Lord Krishna, how he was born in the prison house of Vasudeva, although he is unborn, how he went away from his father's protection to Vraja and lived there incognito, out of fear of the enemy, and how, although unlimitedly powerful, he fled from Mathura in fear. All these bewildering incidents give me distress. So Uddhava is in great ecstasy in Dwarka Dham. He's coming down from Dwarka Dham and he's revealing his heart to us. He's revealing his relationship with Krishna and Krishna's unlimited mercy. Especially today we're going to hear about Krishna's mercy. Yesterday we heard how at first he was sympathizing with Vidura. He said that the Krishna sun has set. So how can there be any happiness? In fact, the whole world is unfortunate. Not only the whole world is unfortunate, the Yadus are unfortunate, I'm unfortunate. Everybody's unfortunate because Krishna has left this earth. And he lamented because he could not serve Krishna to the extent of his love for Krishna. And then he began to describe Krishna, the beauty of Krishna. Krishna is so beautiful. And his pastimes were so wonderful that even Narayan in Vaikuntha was anxious to see the pastimes of Krishna. Even Ram, even Nrisimha, they wanted to see the pastimes of Krishna. He was so beautiful and so loving with his devotees. And then at the end, Uddhava described how when there is friction between the demons and the devotees, at that point, Lord Krishna appears. So now Uddhava is describing some contradictions in Krishna. How he is unborn, and still he was born in the prison of Kamsa. Devahuti will also hear when we discuss the Sankhya philosophy. She says that it's quite amazing, if you think about it, that the whole cosmic manifestation is within the abdomen of the Lord. But at the same time, the Lord has appeared from my abdomen, she says. Now this is quite amazing. He is containing the whole cosmic manifestation, but he's coming from my abdomen. So this is Krishna. Well, so we'll read a little bit of the purport, the second half of the purport. Prabhupada says, because the Lord is all-powerful, it is possible for him to adjust opposites, such as birth and no birth, power and defeat, fear and fearlessness. A pure devotee knows very well how it is possible for the Lord to adjust opposite things, but he laments for the non-devotees, who not knowing the supreme glories of the Lord, think of him as imaginary, simply because there are so many apparently contradictory statements in the scriptures. Factually, there is nothing contradictory. Everything is possible when we understand the Lord as the Lord, and not as one of us, with all our imperfection. So just because we can't do it, doesn't mean Krishna can't do it. So we should not try to limit Krishna with our own brain power. In the 6th canto, 9th chapter, verse 36, the demigods have described the Lord as being able to reconcile all contradictions. And Srila Prabhupada made a very nice comment in the purport to that verse. He said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the reservoir of everything, including all knowledge, all truth, and all contradictions. So Krishna, he's the reservoir of all contradictions. So we have heard actually some other contradictory statements in the Upanishads and other scriptures. Would anybody like to tell me some? Yes.
He's far and
he's near. At the same time. Yes. What else?
He's got hands, he doesn't have hands.
He has hands and he doesn't have hands. Yes.
He's inside,
he's outside. Adipurush.
He's
a source of all qualities, but he's without qualities. Yes.
He has no name.
Yes. He has no name, but he has so many names. Yes.
He's unborn, but he takes
He's unborn, but he takes birth. Yes. What does it say in Isha Upanishad?
He walks and doesn't walk.
He walks and he doesn't walk. Yes. He walks and he doesn't walk. And what does it say in Bhagavad Gita? In the 13th chapter. Okay, what is that in English?
320. I have no desire, no prescribed duty to perform.
Mm.
Nor do I desire anything, but still I drive your chariot.
Okay. Still he works.
I do everything, but I think.
Yes. He's Carter a Carter. Yes? Louder. Prabhavishnuchara. Okay. Yes, Bhaktichha, Pravishicha. So he's a super soul. He's the source of all senses, but he's without senses. So this is very contradictory. So how do we reconcile all these contradictions? What is the solution to all this? Seems very difficult for a mundane person to understand, or even for somebody who is very philosophically inclined to understand all these contradictions. How is it possible? What is the answer? Inconceivable, okay. It's inconceivable. Don't even try to understand. Any other answers? Shimari?
The true nature is first in material, so he has nothing to do with the material.
Okay. He has nothing to do with material, but he has spiritual. Charudeshana, you had something?
Yes, senses, but the senses are not material.
Right. Along the same line, the senses are not material. Right, they're spiritual senses. Okay, Madhavan Puri.
His energies are interchangeable.
His energies are interchangeable. Okay, that's another good answer. So we cannot interchange our energies. We cannot interchange our soul with our body and anything like that. Or our hands cannot do the work of the feet or the mouth. We're not like Krishna. So if you accept that he's God, everything's inconceivable, and also that spiritually he can do everything, but materially he has nothing to do. He has no material senses. He has no material qualities. Then we can understand all these contradictions. And this also goes along with the line of the discussion we were having the other day about how when Krishna appears, he appears differently according to the perception of the person who sees him. Like for when he appeared to Prahlad Maharaj, he was a supreme solace. But for Hiranyakashipu, he was fear personified. So these are also, how can he be fear and solace at the same time? It's according to how you perceive him. So devotees appreciate that although Krishna has so much power when he's with the devotees, he's just like a tame lion cub. Oh, yes. Okay, that's another thing. I'll tell that after. Verse 17. Lord Krishna beg pardon from his parents for their, Krishna's and Balaram's, inability to serve their feet due to being away from home because of great fear of Kamsa. He said, O Mother, O Father, please excuse us for this inability. All this behavior of the Lord gives me pain at heart. So what's the pain that Uddhava's feeling? What is this pain that... What is actually the mind of Uddhava? Why is he saying like this? These things are giving me such pain at heart.
Due to humility.
Due to humility. Anything else? Yeah?
How about expensive?
Okay, he's feeling the pain of separation. He wanted to go with Krishna. So that's the pain he's feeling when he starts to remember all of his past, all of the relationship. He cannot serve Krishna now. Of course he can. Krishna gave him some service. Service in separation. Krishna actually did give him service, even after he left. He cannot serve him personally, though. Yes. Okay. So, Nectar of Devotion describes Uddhava's feelings in relationship to Krishna. So we can understand this verse very nicely if we understand Uddhava's relationship with Krishna. This is in Nectar Devotion, chapter 22. It's describing that when you have a mixed relationship with Krishna, friendship, servitorship, parental love, when it mixed together, it's called mixed humor or mixed flavor. So In Nectar Devotion, it says that such mixed flavors are manifested by such devotees as Uddhava. The prominent humor is to be accepted as the devotee's main relationship with Krishna. For example, Uddhava is in a relationship with Krishna as a friend, but in Uddhava's character is a trace of servitude to Krishna, is also visible. Such friendship is called friendship in reverence. So Uddhava is seeing two things. He's seeing the greatness of Krishna. Then again, he's seeing the sweetness of Krishna with his mother and father. So the two mixed together also will give him some concern. Now, Uddhava's relationship with Krishna. In the purport at the end, now Prabhupada gives us here some instructions, some moral instructions, that even if you're the Supreme Lord, still you should serve your parents. And this is about the middle of the last paragraph. The Lord, whose lotus feet are worshipped by demigods like Brahma and Shiva, wanted to worship the feet of Vasudeva. Such instruction by the Lord to the world is quite appropriate. Even if one is a Supreme Lord, one must serve his parents. A son is indebted to his parents in so many ways, and it is the duty of the son to serve his parents, however great the son may be. Indirectly, Krishna wanted to teach the atheists who do not accept the supreme fatherhood of God, and they may learn from this action how much the supreme father has to be respected. So there's a lesson to the world. Not only you serve your parents, you should serve the supreme father, Krishna. Prabhupada is saying this lesson is given by the action of Krishna in worshipping the feet of his parents. So if you keep going back, you'll find that the original father is Krishna. So therefore, we should worship his feet. Father has to be respected. Uddhava was simply struck with wonder by such glorious behavior of the Lord, and he was very sorry that he was unable to go with him. So that is the pain of Uddhava. He's really missing Krishna. He wanted to go with him. And so he's feeling very pained at heart. Verse 18. Who, after smelling the dust of his lotus feet, even once, could ever forget it? Simply by expanding the leaves of his eyebrows, Krishna has given the death blow to those who were burdening the earth. So just because he offered respects to his parents doesn't mean that he's not God. So he's saying all he had to do was lift his eyebrows and they were finished. Does anybody know? There's an example of this. And when Krishna was here on this planet, yes, you've got it? Jarasandha? Yeah, that's one example. He motioned to Bhima how to kill Jarasandha. I don't know if it was his eyebrows, but with his, he split a twig in half. That was for Duryodhana, I think. That was for Duryodhana that he showed his thigh. Actually, there's an example. If you read Bhagavatam carefully, it's not exactly his eyebrows, but close to his eyebrows. It's his glance. By his glance, in the first canto, 9th chapter, verse 35, Bhishmadev, he said, in obedience to the command of his friend, Lord Krishna entered the arena of battlefield of Kurukshetra between the soldiers of Arjuna and Duryodhana, and while there he shortened the lifespans of the opposite party by his merciful glance. This was done simply by his looking at the enemy. He simply looked at them, and they were finished. Just like, so Bhishmadev appreciates this action of Krishna. Bhishmadev could see what was going on. He could see the hand of Krishna inside everything because he was a Mahajan. He could understand how Krishna, just by his glance, he was looking when Krishna took the chariot between the two armies. He simply glanced at them and they were finished. Simply by Krishna's glance.
Also, Mother Kunti, she says
Saikshita.
Just by his cutie hands or Prakriti, he sets it into motion.
Yes. Just by his glance, of course, he sets everything into motion. And not only by his glance he sets into motion, by his glance he's maintaining. In the 11th canto it said, there is a verse that says, if he did not glance continually on this creation, it would not be maintained. He's always glancing. His glance is always there. And then when we see how he creates everything with mixed with the glance, then this, the fire, the ether, and all these things come, but then the final touch, the glance of the Lord. So it's very, very important to understand the glance of the Lord. So let's go to the next verse, verse 19. You have personally seen how the king of Chedi, Shishupala, achieved success in yoga practice. Although he hated Lord Krishna, even the actual yogis aspire after such success with great interest by performance of their various practices. Who can tolerate separation from him? So now Uddhava is remembering the mercy of Krishna even to his enemies and feeling great separation from Krishna. Again, we have some descriptions of Uddhava and separation from Krishna in Nectar of Devotion, chapter 38. So we can imagine that Uddhava is speaking, and here are the symptoms that Uddhava is feeling. When Lord Krishna went to the capital of King Yudhisthira, Uddhava was so afflicted by the fire separation from Krishna, the perspiration from his inflamed body, so he got fever, and tears from his eyes poured from him. In this way, he was completely stunned. And then, when Krishna left Dwarka to look for the Samantaka jewel, and he was late returning home, Uddhava became so afflicted, the symptoms of disease became manifest in his body. Actually, due to his excessive ecstatic love for Krishna, Uddhava became known in Dwarka as crazy. To his great fortune, on that day, Uddhava's reputation as a crazy fellow was firmly established. Uddhava's craziness was practically proved when he went to the Raivataka hill to minutely observe the congested black clouds. In his disturbed condition, he began to pray to these clouds, and he expressed his jubilation by bowing down before them. So this is Uddhava, how he behaves in separation from Krishna. Nectar Devotion, chapter 38. It's a wonderful book. Uddhava has a reputation as a crazy fellow in Dwarka because of his excessive ecstatic love for Krishna. So Uddhava, now he's revealing the feelings of his heart in separation from Krishna, how Krishna was so merciful to his enemies. In verse 20, we'll hear something even more amazing. Certainly, others who were fighters in the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified by the onslaught of Arjuna's arrows, and while seeing the lotus-like face of Krishna, so pleasing to the eyes, they achieved the abode of the Lord. So, here's an example where Krishna gives more credit to his devotees. Shishupala was killed by Krishna, but he only got liberation. But all these soldiers were killed by Arjuna, they got their sarup. So he likes to have his devotees get more credit. Of course, we'll find out there is an example where one of Krishna's enemies got their sarup. We'll hear about that later. So here, another point is Uddhava is describing the benefits of association of devotees. Even if they shoot you with arrows, it's good for you. So Arjuna, he was shooting the enemy, and they got purified. Let's read this purport. It's a very wonderful purport by Srila Prabhupada. Six lines down in the first paragraph. All the warriors who fought against Arjuna, but who were able to see the lotus-like face of the Lord on the battlefront, achieved the abode of the Lord exactly as the devotees of the Lord do. The words, pleasing to the eyes of the seer, are very significant. When the warriors from the other side of the battlefield saw Lord Krishna at the front, they appreciated his beauty, and their dormant instinct of love of God was awakened. Shishupala saw the Lord also, but he saw him as his enemy, and his love was not awakened. Therefore, Shishupala achieved oneness with the Lord by merging in the impersonal glare of his body, called Brahmajyoti. Others, who were in the marginal position, being neither friends nor enemies, but slightly in love of Godhead, by appreciating the beauty of his face, were at once promoted to the spiritual planets, the Vaikunthas. So we should appreciate the association of devotees. We'll go to the end of this paragraph, paragraph 1. Those whose love of God is awakened to the fullest extent go back to the Goloka Vrindavan planet in the spiritual sky, whereas persons who have just awakened to the love of Godhead by accident or association are transferred to the Vaikuntha planets. Essentially, There is no material difference between Goloka and Vaikuntha, but in the Vaikunthas, the Lord is served in unlimited opulence, whereas in Goloka, the Lord is served in natural affection. So this is very, I find this very interesting, how you can attain, just awaken love to love of Godhead by accident or by association. And you can go back to Godhead even if, I guess it's at the time of death, if you awaken to love of Godhead by accident or association. It was at the time of death that this happened to these people. Yes?
In the 8th chapter of the Gita, it's mentioned to the Ashtanga Yogi.
Ashtanga Yogi.
Who goes through the Milky Way path.
Right, right.
If they make it by accident, they don't have to come back.
If they make it by, they can go by accident back to Godhead.
Basically, when the, you know, the sun goes to the southern, northern
oh,
sun,
yeah.
becomes auspicious.
Yeah.
If they happen to be that very out of time, then it's fine.
Not sure. But unless they have unless they have some association with devotees, then they'll just make it to the Brahman.
Yeah.
They'll make it not back to Godhead, but back to the Brahmajyoti. Or to the Brahmajyoti. So paragraph 2. So this is very special. They're going to Vaikuntha. They're not going to the Brahman, these soldiers here. Paragraph 2. This love of God is awakened by association of pure devotees of the Lord. Here, the word Parthashtraputta is significant. Those who saw the beautiful face of the Lord in the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified first by Arjuna when he made his onslaught with arrows. So we're going to go down now to the end, near the end of the purport. I'd say about, well, from where we were, about 6-7 lines down. As soon as Arjuna shot an arrow at an enemy, that enemy became purified of all material contaminations and became eligible to be transferred to the spiritual sky. Just imagine what a way to go. Just get very easy, much easier than our long struggle through anartha nirvritti and all these things for many, many births. Who knows? They just get shot by Arjuna and they go back to Godhead. Those warriors who appreciated the lotus feet of the Lord and saw his face at the front had their dormant love of God awakened, and thus they were transferred at once to Vaikuntha Loka, not to the impersonal state of Brahmajyoti, as was Shishupala. So at this point, I could say there might be another reason why they went back to Godhead. If you remember, before the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna had a meeting with Duryodhan and Arjuna, and the result of that meeting was that Duryodhana got Krishna's army. So it was Krishna's army that Arjuna was killing, because that was his quota in the battle of Kurukshetra. Everyone had their quota. Arjuna's quota was the Samsaptakas, which was Krishna's army. So it's very amusing if you read the Mahabharata. Samsaptakas. Yeah. So this was his quota. If you read the Mahabharata, you'll find that everybody had their quota. Duryodhan, his quota was the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. And so it's very amusing, because during the battle, you know, they have a chance to kill someone, but then they say, no, that's Bhima's quota. Then they let him go. So that they'll just stop fighting and say, okay, anyway, they'll just give him some bad words. They'll taunt him, and then they'll just let him go. Like Karna did that with all the Pandavas. Because he promised Kunti that I'll only kill one, and that's Arjuna. He said, you'll still have 5 sons left after the battle. Because before, Kunti came to Karna and said, actually, you're my son. And Karna said, yes, I know. And he said, so I promise you that I will kill only one. So you'll still have 5 sons either way. So he had a chance to kill the other 4, but he didn't do it. Because also he promised to Kunti. But anyway, these things are going on. So these soldiers on the other side, they got the chance to see Krishna at the front. So therefore, even Arjuna is described, he could not see. Of course, we'll talk about this later. So let's see. Shishupala, back at the purport. Shishupala died without appreciating the Lord, while others died with appreciation of the Lord. Both were transferred to the spiritual sky. But those who awakened to love of God were transferred to the planets of the transcendental sky. Uddhava seemingly lamented that his own position was less than that of the warriors in the battlefield of Kurukshetra because they had attained to Vaikuntha, whereas he remained to lament the disappearance of the Lord. So again, the humility of Uddhava, even the enemies, they're better than me because they're with Krishna. I'm here without him. So this is the bhava of Uddhava here. Now again, he's going to explain Krishna's greatness. Verse 21. Lord Shri Krishna is the Lord of all kinds of threes and is independently supreme by achievement of all kinds of fortune. He is worshipped by the eternal maintainers of the creation, who offer him the paraphernalia of worship by touching their millions of helmets to his feet. So I'm not going to read the purport, but it's a very important one. So I'll just ask you, let's see who read the purport. It's described many, many different kinds of threes that Krishna is the Lord of. Yes. Purusha avatars. Yes. Guna avatars. Yes. Manangopal. What? Three modes. Prashanta.
Three transcendental potencies.
Yes. Sankirtan. Three planetary systems. Which ones are those? Okay, Bhubhuvarswa or else even lower. The hellish, earthly, and heavenly. Okay, so he's the Lord. There's one more. I don't know if it's in this purport. Yes, it is in this purport. Adi Purush. Three pairs of opulences. He's the Lord of six opulences, so three pairs of opulences. Got three in there. So I did a little research in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted this verse to Sanatana Goswami in Madhya Lila, chapter 21. And it starts with verse 32, but I won't read all the verses, I'll just summarize it, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that there are three different levels of understanding of Krishna's lordship of threes. So first of all, there's a general understanding of how he is the Lord of threes. And that general understanding is how he is the Lord of the three guna avatars, Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. This is very general. Now the middle meaning is that he is the Lord of the three purusha incarnations. And the confidential meaning, which we haven't actually discussed almost in this purport, is that he has three places of residence. So this is the confidential meaning which is given to us by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna has three abodes, his internal abode of Goloka Vrindavan, his intermediate abode. This is verse, Madhya 21, 42. I'm reading from here. Madhya 21, 42. His internal abode, his intermediate abode, the spiritual sky Vaikuntha, and the external abode, this material world. And then Lord Chaitanya describes the three abodes. The internal abode is called Goloka Vrindavan. It is there Lord Krishna's personal friends, associates, father and mother live. Vrindavan Dham is very soft due to the mercy of the Supreme Lord, and it is especially opulent due to conjugal love. The transcendental glories of the son of Maharaj Nanda are exhibited here. Under the circumstances, not the least anxiety is awakened within us. Then below that, there is the Vaikunthas, where innumerable expansions of Krishna live. And Lord Chaitanya says, the spiritual sky full of six opulences is the intermediate residence of Lord Krishna. It is there that an unlimited number of forms of Krishna enjoy their pastimes. Then the beautiful description, innumerable Vaikuntha planets, which are just like different rooms of a treasure house, Lord Chaitanya says, are all there filled with all opulences, different rooms of a treasure house. So Krishna has a big treasure house, it's Vaikuntha. And there's different rooms, and Krishna has different pastimes there in different forms. So that's how Lord Chaitanya describes Vaikuntha here. Very beautiful description. Those unlimited planets house the Lord's eternal associates who are also enriched with the six opulences. So then the last one, where we are, on the other side of the river Viraja, is the external abode full of unlimited universes, each containing unlimited atmospheres. The abode of the external energy is called Devidam, and its inhabitants are the conditioned souls. It is there that the material energy, Durga, resides with many opulent maidservants. So here we are. We are in the place of Durga. But in this class, hopefully, we can reach to the other dhams by hearing about Krishna and his descriptions. So now we will... Oh, one more thing I want to do. I want to read something here from Nectar of Devotion, because here in the verse, there's another point. The second... Now we discussed the first sentence. Now we want to discuss the second sentence. Not discuss, but I'll just read something nice in the verse. He is worshipped by the eternal maintainers of the creation who offer him paraphernalia of worship by touching their millions of helmets to his feet. So this is Nectar of Devotion, Transcendental Affection. This is chapter 36. This is a conversation between two of Krishna's wives, Jambavati and Kalindi. So Jambavati is asking questions to Kalindi. Jambavati inquired, "Who is this personality circumambulating our Krishna?" Kalindi replied, "She is Ambika, superintendent of all universal affairs." Then Jambavati inquired, "Who is this personality who is trembling at the sight of Krishna?" Kalindi said, "He is Lord Shiva." Then Jambavati inquired, "Who is the person offering prayers?" Kalindi said, "He is Lord Brahma." Then Jambavati asked, "Who is the person who has fallen on the ground offering respect to Krishna?" Kalindi replied, "He is Indra, king of heaven." Then Jambavati asked, "Who is this person who has come with the demigods and is laughing with them?" Kalindi said, "He is my elder brother, Yamaraj, the superintendent of death." So this is the demigods coming to see Krishna. And there are different feelings when they see Lord Shiva's trembling and Yamaraj is laughing. Yes?
I also think it's another way to see this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Brahma goes to see Krishna. And unlimited Brahmas come and they put their heads at his feet. There's thousands and thousands of heads. It's compared to the jingling of the jewels on the helmets, prayers up at the feet.
Okay. So everybody knows that story, that when Krishna was at Dwaraka, then Lord Brahma came to visit him, and the doorkeeper came out and asked, "Which Brahma?" "Which Brahma? You know, four heads. The one who created the universe? You know, that Brahma." So then he goes in, and then Lord Krishna calls all the Brahmas from all the universes, and then he realizes, oh, he's like a mosquito in the company of elephants. So this is Lord Brahma. Yeah, that's a very good reference also for this verse. How all the Brahmas, that when they touch their helmets to Krishna's head, the noise was like bells, like prayers offering to Krishna. Okay. So even the helmets can offer prayers. We'll hear about that, how the Lord's paraphernalia also offers prayers to him. Verse 22. "Therefore, O Vidura, does it not pain us, his servitors, when we remember that he, Lord Krishna, used to stand before King Ugrasena, who was sitting on the royal throne, and used to submit explanations before him, saying, 'Oh, my Lord, please let it be known to you.'" So purport, paragraph 1, Prabhupada explains the different rasas, how Krishna behaved with different people differently. Lord Krishna's gentle behavior before his so-called superiors, such as his father, grandfather, and elder brother. So that's, Krishna is like the servant there. His amiable behavior with his so-called wives, friends, and contemporary so-called. So friendship. His behavior as a child before his mother Yashoda, so Vatsalya. And his naughty dealings with his young girlfriends. So this is conjugal love. Cannot bewilder a pure devotee like Uddhava. Others who are not devotees are bewildered by such behavior of the Lord who acted just like a human being. So Uddhava, he's not bewildered, but still he's feeling pain at heart. Another quote from Nectar of Devotion, chapter 36. Uddhava has described the transcendental qualities of Krishna. "Lord Krishna, who is our master and worshipable deity, controller of Shiva and Brahma, and controller of the whole universe, accepts the controlling orders of Ugrasena, his grandfather. He is the proprietor of millions of universes, but still he begged a little land from the ocean. And although he is just like an ocean of wisdom, he sometimes consults me. He is so great and magnanimous, yet he is engaged in his different activities, just like an ordinary person. So this is Uddhava's rasa with Krishna. He's seeing how great Krishna is, and then he's seeing, but he's bowing down at his parents. He's worshipping Ugrasena. He's taking the orders. So seeing these two things at once. So it's quite an amazing thing to see these two. Like in Vrindavan, they don't see. They just see the sweetness of Krishna. But Uddhava is seeing both of these at once. So it's quite astounding. So verse 23. Aho bhakiyam stanakalukutam jigam sayayapa yayat apisadvi leve kachem datyuchitam tatanyam kangva dayalam shayanam vachema. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful, and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. This verse was heard by Shukadev Goswami. When he left home, he didn't care about his father, his mother, anything. He just left. And his father, Vyas, was running, my son, come back. So then finally, Vyasadev, we hear from the Puranas that Vyasadev, he sent out his disciples to attract Shukadev, and this was one of the verses which attracted Shukadev to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So let's read the purport. Here is an example of the extreme mercy of the Lord, even to his enemy. It is said that a noble man accepts the good qualities of a person of doubtful character, just as one accepts nectar from a stock of poison. So just imagine, here's a person of bad, a doubtful character. Krishna is seeing the good qualities. We don't. We see the doubtful character. We don't see the good qualities. So this is Krishna. He was administered deadly poison by Putana, a she-demon, who tried to kill the wonderful baby. Because she was a demon, it was impossible for her to know the Supreme Lord, even though playing the part of a baby was no less than the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. His value as a Supreme Lord did not diminish upon his becoming a baby to please his devotee Yashoda. The Lord may assume the form of a baby or a shape other than that of a human being, but it doesn't make the slightest difference. He's always the same Supreme. So Prabhupada, in his preaching, often preached on this particular point with this pastime of Putana, that Krishna is God right from the lap of his mother. And the proof is that he killed a demon when he was still a young baby, small baby. He could kill a huge demon. So Prabhupada says that God is not manufactured in a mystic factory. You cannot make your own God or manufacture yourself as God. You see, at the age of 3 months or whatever, he killed this huge demon. So at the end of the purport, next we're going on, Prabhupada says, a living creature, however powerful he may be by dint of severe penance, can never become equal to the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna accepted the motherhood of Putana. Now he's going to talk about mercy. Because she pretended to be an affectionate mother, allowing Krishna to suck her breast. So just imagine, mother. The child, he feels safe in the lap of his mother, feels protected, he feels nourished. The mother has this relationship, but she came to murder, to kill the child. Such abominable action on the part of Putana. So Prabhupada says, the Lord accepts the least qualification of the living entity and awards him the highest reward. That is the standard of his character. Therefore, who but the Lord can be the ultimate shelter? So Putana, what did she give Krishna? She gave him a little affection. She pretended to be a mother. That's what she gave Krishna. But actually, she came to kill him. Lord Brahma, he says, 10:14:35, my mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon the residents of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, relatives, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are dedicated only to you? So Prabhupada, of course, he used this example in preaching also. He said that when we perform devotional service, we do mixed service. There's a dark side and there's a bright side of our service. So Prabhupada said, Krishna takes only the bright side. He never takes the dark side, because everyone in this material world, he has only dark side, Prabhupada said. So what will Krishna do when we come to serve him? He has to take the bright side. Another point is that even if you do a slight service for Krishna, Krishna never forgets. He's grateful. He's grateful. And that he also says in Bhagavad Gita, does anyone know the verse? Where even a slight service, Neha Bikrama Nashasti, but Yavaya. Swapamapyasadharmasyat Trayate Mahatobayat. Even a little service you do for Krishna and protect you from the greatest type of fear. Krishna will never forget, Prabhupada says. You do a little service. So I would like to read something. We hear this verse and we react to it, but I'd like to read here from Chaitanya Bhagavat, the reaction of one devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he heard this verse from Mukunda Prabhu. So Gadadhar Pandit was convinced by Mukunda to go and visit Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So there he saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi sitting on an opulent reddish couch, decorated with brass armrests, three opulent canopies over his head, an opulent bed next to him covered with silk cloth and pillows, so many pillows on the bed, 5 or 7 big and small water pots, an opulent brass container filled with pan ready for him to chew, 2 opulent spittoons on each side of him. And he smiled as he chewed pan, and he licked at his lips in the mirror, chewing pan. This is Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Two persons constantly fanned him with peacock fans. His forehead was decorated with sandalwood paste, just like you see the deities. He had all these beautiful decorations on his face, sandalwood. And his hairstyle. The author says, what can I say about the wonderful style of his hair? Anointed with fragrant amalaki oil. He looked just like Cupid, actually. Or a prince, a great prince. In front of him was a beautiful palanquin with all accessories for his travel. So Gadadhar, when he saw this, he thought, how can he be a devotee? A great Vaishnava? His appearance, he looks just like a prince. His opulent hairstyle, his dress, he looks like a materialistic person to me. So understanding the heart of Gadadhar, Mukunda began to recite some verses. This is Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya Lila, chapter 7, starting with verses 57. So Mukunda, he started singing. Rakshasi putana shishu kaite nyadaya ishare varite gela kala kuttalaya. The witch Putana mercilessly kills children. She tried to kill the Lord with poison. Tahareyo matripadele nishare napojeo bodhajiv hena dayalare. Yet the Lord awarded her the position of mother. How can a foolish person not worship such a merciful Lord? Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children. And with that desire, she came to heal Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. Soon as Vidyanidhi heard And of course, he recited this verse from Bhagavatam also. As soon as he heard this, he became absorbed in ecstasy, and the eight symptoms of ecstatic love manifested in his body. He roared loudly, exclaiming, "Go on reciting, go on reciting." He fell on the ground. He broke all his paraphernalia, kicking with his feet. The opulent pan container, the nicely prepared pan, the water pots, the bed. Out of ecstatic love, he tore apart his clothes. What happened to his opulent hairstyle as he rolled on the ground and cried profusely? "Oh Krishna, oh my Lord, my life and soul, you have made my heart hard like stone or wood. In your present incarnation, I have been deceived." So he was lamenting that Putana got the mercy. Why not me? Why didn't I get the mercy? That you have deceived me. So this was his feeling. Uddhava's having this feeling also. Why? They got the enemies of Krishna. They got the mercy. I'm still here. I didn't get the mercy. So this is the bhava of Uddhava, the bhava of Pundarik. He fell to the ground. He rolled about so forcefully, everyone thought, has his bones been broken to pieces? He shivered so vigorously out of ecstatic love, even 10 men could not hold him still. Clothes, bedding, water pots, bowls, everything was smashed by the kicking of his feet. There was not a single item spared. All of his servants then pacified him and protected what was left. So this is what happens when a devotee hears this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, a pure devotee. This is his reaction to hearing this verse about Putana. But why? I didn't get the mercy. So this is the bhava. This is how Uddhava is feeling. He said, Krishna was not merciful to me. He gave them all. They went back to Godhead. I'm still here. So we can understand, we can feel what Uddhava is feeling right now. Verse 24, and he's going to say it now. "I consider the demons who are inimical toward the Lord to be more than the devotees. Because while fighting with the Lord, absorbed in thoughts of enmity, they were able to see the Lord carried on the shoulder of Garuda, the son of Tarksha, Kashyap, and carrying the wheel weapon in his hand." So is this true? Are the demons better than the devotees? Like Uddhava says? No, why not?
Because the demons get only a test and a surgery.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Pachi, you have something? Okay, no. Okay, yes. Feeling of separation. Chardeshana? The demons serve the Lord unfavorably. Yes, so that is not so appreciated as the favorable service. Sankirtan. Yes, favorably as an enemy. Because his mood was favorable. His mood was actually favorable. His mood was, he was shooting arrows with love. But Shishupala was not, his mood was not love of Krishna. Kamsa, his mood was not love of Krishna.
However, they were also devotees. They
weren't acting as devotees though. They were devotees, that's a fact. But in this life, they were not acting as devotees. Although their mind, they couldn't, of course, give up their mentality. Somehow they had to think of Krishna, although it was unfavorably. But Bhishma was actually acting as devotee. He was one of the friends of Krishna. He was in Hastinapur. He loved Krishna, actually. He's a Mahajan, yes. And his shooting the arrows was out of love. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that when the lover goes to another lover, sometimes he bites. So that's Bhishma. And so Krishna also felt that. And Krishna also, when Bhishma was threatening Arjuna, then Krishna went to Bhishma just like a lover, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says. So that was their relationship, actually. They had very strong love for each other. And it was in chivalrous rasa. Oh, actually here, yeah, I do bring Bhishma in here. Anyway, Prabhupada does say in the purport that in the middle, actually, the demons can never be equal to the pure devotees, But Uddhava was thinking in that way because of his feelings of separation. He was thinking that at the last stage of his life, he might not be able to see the Lord face to face as did the demons. So he was thinking, yes, they saw you at the time of death, but how can I see you now? You're gone. How will I be able to see you at the time of death? So he's very humble. Bhishma Dev also, he had the same, in his prayers, he had the same feeling. He was praying, Krishna, please come before me at the time of death. Because he was thinking, if you don't, I don't know what my destination will be. Prabhupada explained this. Bhishma was also thinking like this, that if I don't see Krishna at the time of death, I was fighting with Krishna, I was his enemy. So who knows what's going to happen to me after death. So Bhishma had this same feeling like Uddhava here. So the purport, Prabhupada says, the fact is that the devotees who are always engaged in devotional service of the Lord and transcendental love are rewarded many hundreds and thousands of times more than the demons by being elevated to the spiritual planets, where they remain with the Lord in eternal blissful existence. So then he talks about the impersonal liberation at the end. For comparison, one can just imagine the difference between floating in space and residing in one of the planets in the sky. The pleasure of living entities on the planets is greater than that of those who have no body and who merge with the molecules of the sun rays. So I'd like to get back to Bhishma again. In the purport, Prabhupada explains that Bhishma Dev never forgot the beautiful feature of the Lord as Parthasarathi, which even Arjuna could not see. Arjuna was behind the beautiful Parthasarathi, while Bhishma was just in front of the Lord. So in that sense, the demons are more fortunate because they can see Krishna at the front of the battle. So Bhishma Dev had, Prabhupada said Bhishma Dev was also having the same realization as Uddhava. So we'll go on to the next verse, verse 25. Personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna, being prayed to by Brahma to bring welfare to the earth, was begotten by Vasudeva in the womb of his wife Devaki in the prison of the king of Bhoja. So after praising the qualities of Krishna, the mercy of Krishna, now Uddhava is going to begin his narration of the pastimes of Krishna in Braj. 26. Thereafter, his father, being afraid of Kamsa, brought him to the cow pastures of Maharaj Nanda, and there he lived for 11 years, like a covered flame with his elder brother, Baladev. So at the end of the purport, Prabhupada explains that Krishna wasn't really afraid of Kamsa, but actually it was his relationship with Vasudev. That Vasudev had this rasa, he wanted to protect Krishna. So when Krishna was lost in the Jamuna River, Vasudev went mad out of separation from Krishna. Where is my beautiful son? So he had this rasa. So Krishna was nourishing the rasa of Vasudev, pretending, oh yes, you better take me over to the house of Nanda Maharaj so I can be safe from Kamsa. So this was Krishna's rasa. Verse 27. In his childhood, the Almighty Lord was surrounded by cowherd boys and calves, and thus he traveled on the shore of the Jamuna River, through gardens densely covered with trees and filled with the vibrations of chirping birds. So Prabhupada, at the end of the purport, he describes this land of Vrindavan, where we are right now. Prabhupada says, "Land of Vrindavan, the Lord's childhood playground, still remains today, and anyone who visits these places enjoys the same transcendental bliss, although the Lord is not physically visible to our imperfect eyes." Here we are in this place of Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya recommended this land of the Lord as identical with the Lord, therefore worshipable by the devotees. This instruction is taken up especially by the followers of Lord Chaitanya known as the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And because the land is identical with the Lord, devotees like Uddhava and Vidura visited these places 5,000 years ago in order to have direct contact with the Lord, visible or not visible. Thousands, here Prabhupada, the same thing he said in the purport last chapter, thousands of devotees of the Lord are still wandering in these sacred places of Vrindavan, and all of them are preparing themselves to go back home, back to Godhead. And so are we. We are also wandering in the sacred land of Vrindavan, preparing ourselves to go back home, back to Godhead. So this is Prabhupada's wonderful blessing on us, that we can also, he gave us Vrindavan. Prabhupada gave us Vrindavan Dham, so that we can come here also and appreciate Krishna. Otherwise, how would we have known anybody here in Vrindavan, in any ashram, anywhere from the Western countries? It's just because of the mercy of Srila Prabhupada that we are able to be here in Vrindavan. Because he sacrificed his pleasure of living in Vrindavan, he sacrificed for us, and therefore we can today actually experience with our, anyway, experience the same things. Verse 28. When the Lord displayed his activities, just suitable for childhood, he was visible only to the residents of Vrindavan. Sometimes he would cry and sometimes laugh, just like a child. And while so doing, he would appear like a lion cub. So Krishna, he's very powerful, but he's hiding his power. Because his mother, his father, they don't want to see his power, his friends. They want to see the sweetness of Krishna. So Prabhupada, this whole purport is very nice. Prabhupada actually tells us some of the lila of Krishna. So we'll read the purport. If anyone wants to enjoy the childhood pastimes of the Lord, then he has to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Raj like Nanda, Upananda, and other parental inhabitants. A child may insist on having something and cry like anything to get it, disturbing the whole neighborhood. And then immediately after achieving the desired thing, he laughs. Such crying and laughing is enjoyable to the parents and elderly members of the family. So the Lord would simultaneously cry and laugh in this way and merge his devotee parents in the humor of transcendental pleasure. These incidents are enjoyable only by the residents of Braj like Nanda Maharaj, not by the impersonalist worshippers of Brahman or Paramatma. Sometimes, when attacked in the forest by demons, Krishna would appear struck with wonder, but he looked on them like the cub of a lion and killed them. His childhood companions would also be struck with wonder, and when they came back home, they would narrate the story to their parents, and everyone would appreciate the qualities of their Krishna. Actually, I was just reading in Nectar Devotion that some of his friends would help him fight the demons. They were very expert in fighting. And one of the demons, they really knocked him around before Krishna got to him. I forget which one it was. It was one of those.
Aristasura. Was thrown on the ground, and some little boy came up and kicked him in the ear.
In Nectar Devotion, it describes.
Pulling on the other ear.
Yeah, Nectar Devotion describes that they were actually getting the demon, you know. He was having a hard time with them. They were really disturbing him. I have to look that up, actually. It's under fraternal affection. So anyway, Prabhupada says, child Krishna did not belong only to his parents, Nanda and Yashoda. He was the son of all the elderly inhabitants of Vrindavan and the friend of all contemporary boys and girls. Everyone loved Krishna. He was the life and soul of everyone, including the animals, the cows, and the calves. So next verse is very wonderful. While herding the very beautiful bulls, the Lord, who is a reservoir of all opulence and fortune, used to blow his flute, and thus he enlivened his faithful followers, the cowherd boys. So this verse is very significant, because Krishna, when he blows his flute, so many things happen. So many reactions in so many different kinds of living entities. So I'd like to discuss this point here. What happens when Krishna blows his flute? Madhavendra? Jamuna stands still. Sometimes she stands still and sometimes she goes in whirlpools and offers lotus flowers to Krishna's lotus feet when he blows his flute. Nishinga? Yeah, the gopis, whatever they're doing, immediately they drop the babies or whatever and they go to Krishna. Adipurush. Yeah, the calves, they're drinking the milk and they hold the tits of the calf and they just, and they look at Krishna and it says they embrace Krishna through their eyes. Yes, Patri. The birds stop singing. They go up in the trees, it says, up in the branches, and they meditate on the sound, just like sages. Yes.
And also the parents, they converse. Shuka and Shari, they converse.
Yeah?
They converse about the glories of Krishna with each other.
Shuka and Shari start talking about the glories of Krishna. Divyambar. Yes. The wives of the demigods lose it, and they want to go to Krishna. Yes. Yes, the deer go and they worship Krishna. Both the husbands and wives, together they worship Krishna. So the gopis are envious of them. Yes. The movable things stop moving. And this is a general description here. The movable things stop moving and the immovable things start moving. The stones start melting. And yes, Adipurush. Yes, Brahma becomes confused again when he hears the flute. Yes. Okay, so the clouds thunder in beat to the flute. They accompany Krishna. And they pour small, fine droplets of water. And Krishna blows his flute. And Lord Shiva, he starts to cry loudly in outer space, and all the demons start running away, and all the devotees are happy. Lord Shiva just starts crying. This is a nectar of devotion. Anything else, Adipurush? Yogi's meditation is broken in the caves of the mountains. And it's described sometimes one of them starts bashing his head on the stone. When he hears the sound. Actually, I think it's the sound of the conch shell. Yeah. The what? The parrot, the peacocks. Peacocks start dancing. Yeah. And when the other animals see the peacocks dancing, they get stunned. There's all the other animals, the bulls, the cows. The peacocks start dancing. I saw one peacock dancing today, actually. On the roof of a house. It's the season. Yeah. Yes, that was already mentioned. The gopis, they leave everything. Yes. Everyone becomes happy, except the demons. Yes. Adipurush. Gopis' clothes become tied. Okay.
Isn't it that the wife of the demons had miscarriage?
Wife of the demons had miscarriage. That's conch shell, I think. It's conch shell or Sudarshan Chakra. Okay. When he goes into the heavenly planet, into the lower planets.
Subterranean,
yeah. Adipurush. All other sounds are gone. Only the sound of the flute is in the ears of the gopis.
They wish that all their senses became ears.
They wish all their senses became ears so they could hear more of the flute. So this is what happens. So Rupa Goswami says, don't go see Krishna, or else you'll never come back. So don't hear the flute of Krishna, or else that's it. Actually, it's an opposite way of saying, hear the flute of Krishna. Yes, we're aspiring for this day when we will hear the flute of Krishna. Oh, Brahma got initiated by the flute, didn't he? And one it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the flute song initiated Brahma. Okay. Let's see if we missed anything here. Whoops. Some quote, the Bhakti Rasayan. Most of it we covered. Let's see. Yeah, oh, here's one. Here's a nice one. When Krishna plays his flute, the trees and creepers in the forest respond by becoming so luxuriant with fruits and flowers, they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. As their branches bend low with the weight, the filaments on their trunks and vines stand erect out of ecstasy of love of God, and the trees and the creepers pour down a rain of sweet sap. This is 10:35:9. Yeah.
Also, the seasons change.
Seasons change. Oh, I never heard that one. It's interesting. Okay. Let's see if we've missed anything else. Oh, we forgot about the cranes, the swans,
and the lake-dwelling birds, when they hear the flute, they approach Krishna, close their eyes, maintain strict silence, and worship him by fixing their consciousness upon him in deep meditation. So all the birds are like in deep meditation. The ones in the forest do the same. They go up on the branches and they start to meditate, just listening to the sound of the flute. And we heard about the deer, we heard about the calves and the bulls. That's it. What else? Govardhan. Yes? 10:21:15.
Unless he became trapped in there and break.
So the rivers. Prabhupada, actually, here's Prabhupada's translation. From when the rivers hear the flute song of Krishna, their minds begin to desire him. And thus the flow of their currents is broken and their waters are agitated, moving around in whirlpools. Then with the arms of their waves, the rivers embrace Murari's lotus feet and holding on to them present offerings of lotus flowers. So this is 10:21:15.
Yeah, but not only that, Rupa Goswami mentioned the same thing in the monastico.
Really?
Said that Yamuna Devi is with her waves, her arms of her waves, are offering prayers to Padmanabha's lotus feet.
Okay. Racing by prayers. Yes, Sadi Purush. Stones melt at the sound of Krishna's flute. Okay? So we've thoroughly discussed the flute of Krishna. Let's hear what else happens. Verse 30. The great wizards who are able to assume any form were engaged by the king of Bhoja, Kamsa, to kill Krishna. But in the course of his pastimes, the Lord killed them as easily as a child breaks dolls. So, Prabhupada says in the purport, children play with toy lions, elephants, boars, and many similar dolls, which are broken by the children in the course of their playing with them. Before the Almighty Lord, any powerful living being is just like a toy lion in the hands of a playing child. Okay, so I want you all to tell me, what were Krishna's toys that he broke? Yeah, I want to know specifically. Yeah, he had a toy cart which he broke. What else? He had a toy bird, Bakashura. Yeah? He had a toy horse. He broke that one too. Keshi, yeah?
Bull,
Arishtashura, he broke that. He breaks all his toys. What other toys did he have?
Elephant.
Huh?
Elephant,
yeah. Toy elephant. He had a crane, yeah, Bakashura.
Kalia.
He had a couple of snakes. He liked snakes. He had Kalia. Kalia was a big one with many, many hoods. Whirlwind, yeah. He even played with the wind, yeah. He had toy calf, yeah. Vatsasura. So these were Krishna's toys. So actually Kamsa was pleasing Krishna indirectly because he was giving toys to Krishna to play with. But Krishna would break his toys in his playing. So it was great fun for Krishna. So Kamsa was actually serving Krishna here, giving him nice toys. But unfortunately, all the toys got broken, so he had to keep sending him more. More toys for Krishna. So this was the fun of Krishna's pastimes. Verse 31. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were perplexed by great difficulties because a certain portion of the Jamuna was poisoned by the chief of the reptiles, Kalia. The Lord chastised the snake king within the water and drove him away. And after coming out of the river, he caused the cows to drink the water and prove that the water was again in its natural state. Verse 32. The Supreme Lord Krishna desired to utilize the opulent financial strength of Maharaj Nanda for worship of the cows. And also he wanted to give a lesson to Indra, the king of heaven. Thus, he advised his father to perform worship of Gow, or the pasturing land and the cows, with the help of learned Brahmins. Verse 33. O sober Vidura, King Indra, his honor having been insulted, poured water incessantly on Vrindavan
And thus the inhabitants of Braj, the land of cows, were greatly distressed. But the compassionate Lord Krishna saved them from danger with his pastime umbrella, the Govardhan Hill. So we have a verse here from Govardhana Vasa Pratana Dashka. First verse. You know it, Maharaj? Nijapati.
Nijapati Bhuja Chaturdhandra Vaham Prapatya Pradihadamara Dushko Dejendra Garva Atula Pratala Shaiva Shreni Gopa Priyam Ne Nijanagatani Vasana Devi Govardhana.
Twam. O Govardhan, O King of all incomparable great mountains, O hill that became an umbrella with the arm of your own Lord as the handle. So Krishna's arm was the handle of the umbrella of Govardhan Hill. Then destroyed the pride of the Deva King, madly attacking with raised weapons. Please grant the residence near you that is so dear to me. So this is the pastime. Krishna's arm became the umbrella's handle, and Govardhan became the umbrella. Verse 34. In the third season, what you have something? What?
Famous Mukunda Muktavali.
Okay.
Verse number 4.
Tell us about it.
This is Yajna Bandha Rushta Chakra Nuna Gola Mega Chakra Vishnipoda Kinda Gopa Vikshu Gopa Jata Gopa Shitta Savyas Papanma Dara Kota Shaila Sarama Gupta Kosta Lakshra Lakshra Bandha Tati Kondya Chakra.
Yes?
The whole Govardhan Lila in one shloka.
One shloka?
Yeah. Wow. He said, Yajna Bandha, when the sacrifice of Indra was broken, Rushta Chakra, Indra became angry. Nuna Gorda Mega Chakra, because the great host of clouds to come, Vrishti Porta, which rained on Vrindavan, Kinda Gopa, which made the coward men sad, which made the coward men, Vikchana, sing that, Krishna Upajata Kopa, became angry, Chitta Salya Hasta Padma, he slipped his left hand, Dharat Ucha Shaila Sadma, and lifted the great lofty hill, Gupta, below that, Raksha, he protected the coward men, Raksha Bam, therefore, protect me, Tathadya, today, in the same way. Oh, Lotus, I
know. Great. Very wonderful prayer. So we pray for the protection of the Lord in the same way as the Lord protected the residents by lifting Govardhan Hill, residents of Vrindavan. Last verse, verse 34. In the third season of the year, the Lord enjoyed as a central beauty of the assembly of women by attracting them with his pleasing songs in an autumn night brightened by moonshine. So this is the end of Uddhava's description of all the rasas that Krishna enjoyed with his devotees in Braj. So we see the mood of Uddhava. He's seeing the sweetness at the same time he's seeing the great power of Krishna. So he's feeling great pain at heart. How Krishna, he's so great, but he's so sweet at the same time. He's also feeling the pain of separation. Appreciating the mercy of Krishna to his enemies more than himself, he feels. They got more mercy than me. Why he left me here? He took them and he didn't take me. So actually, but when we hear this, we can feel like actually there's great hope for us. Because Krishna takes the least quality, the good qualities of our service, and he forgets about the dark side. So he'll take us back also. We just have to learn not to go to anyone else but Krishna. Bhava Grahi Janardana. Yes. And to get to Krishna, of course, we have to take shelter of Srila Prabhupada. So we take shelter of Srila Prabhupada, and even if Krishna forgets, Prabhupada won't. And Prabhupada will take us. Prabhupada also only sees the bright side. So many examples of there, of my godbrothers who didn't die in the best conditions, and they had left the movement. But Prabhupada, at the end of life, Prabhupada came for them. So we just have to hold on to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, and he will remind Krishna of our good qualities. And Krishna, of course, he also sees everything good. And so when we hear these pastimes, when we hear about Putana, great hope should be awakened in our hearts that there is a place for us also. There is mercy for us. Mercy is there. So all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any questions? Maharaj, or comments?
This you mentioned before about that the famous Mahobhakti Sloka.
Yeah.
That was used by, is heard by Sukadeva Goswami and Srila Vyasa. They sent his disciples to attract him back.
Yeah, this is what I have heard, yeah.
Is there a quote of a reference? serpents? Were there snakes?
Yeah, I have to look it up. I know in Brahma Vaivarta Purana the story is described. Yes, in Brahma, if you have it, you can look it up there. Okay, so look it up there. Brahma Vaivarta Purana. This Purana is quoted in the 9th canto by Śrīla Prabhupāda, describing the history of Śukadeva Goswami. But actually that story, perhaps I heard it in class by Bhrijan or by one of the sannyasis. I heard that story where he sent them out. But if you can research it from Brahma Vaivarta Purana, actually, and you can let us know what it says. It's huge.
It's like Vibhisha Purana. It's described that there's some controversy about it.
Oh, okay.
What is interpolated and what is not.
Okay.
That's what I'm told.
Okay, so I'll try and look that up also in my notes.
We have to accept. I think that when I discussed it with my friends in this context, I said, well, then how do we accept which is interpolated and which is not? They
right.
said, I suppose we have to refer to other Puranas.
Right.
If the Leela is described in other Puranas, it's something right. we accept that this is the genuine thing and is not interpreted.
Right. So you can, well, look it up in 9th Canto Purport. It is, Prabhupada does quote Brahma Vaivarta Purana.
9th Canto.
Yeah, it's in a verse and in a purport, but I don't think this is described.
This, no, about this
yeah, something is described about the history of Shukadev.
Yeah, I think it's
okay. Right, that's
right,
good.
Check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
It.
Yeah, yes, Kalia.
And the other one was Indra and the Maniac Moon.
Indra and Putana. Putana also. Oh yeah. Yeah, I was going to look that up and I forgot. But
yeah,
you did it.
It was very envious
yes,
nature.
Envious nature, Kaliya.
There are two parts. So
wow.
It's obviously something we have to be very careful of.
Yeah.
Kaliya.
We like the
particular
Kaliya.
Yeah.
Chaitanya Shikshamrita.
So there's also something else that can
right.
disturb our
and Putana is also there.
And Putana, the false guru.
The false guru.
And there's
Buddhist
and
guru.
Who actually
live right. Yes, Putana actually also the false guru poisons. So if you study the Leela of Krishna, first Putana gave her breast to Krishna, and then after that Yashoda made sure and gave her breast to Krishna to make sure he was okay. So after the poison, you have to get the real guru. You have to get the real Siddhanta to counteract the poison. And Yashoda was the real guru, the real mother, Krishna. She gave her milk, and then they said, okay, now he's okay. He's drinking my milk.
She also used all the Vedic
mantras.
Yeah, cow.
Yes, cow. Okay. Which story?
The concept of the quota.
Oh, the quota, in the Battle of Kurukshetra.
What is that?
Yeah. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, every fighter had already made vows. I'm going to kill this one. I'm going to kill that one. Just like Drishtadyumna had Drona. Shikhandi had Bhishma. Shikhandi and Arjuna had Bhishma. That, okay, this is the one they're meant to kill. Yudhisthira had, I think it was Shalya. Yudhisthira. So it was already settled who was going to kill whom. Well, yes, Patri. Okay, well, it was decided in different ways. In different ways it was decided. Just like for Bhima, when Draupadi was insulted, he made a vow, I will kill 100 sons of Duryodhana. So a lot of them, some of them made vows, and some of them it was their quota. They met together and said, okay, you have him, I have him. Before the strategy before the battle.
Oh, and when Duryodhana was saying that you're no longer the Pandava's wife, you should sit on my lap.
Yeah.
And he pointed to his thigh. His right thigh. The wife usually sits on the right thigh or the left thigh?
Left, I think.
Left. So he was pointing at the left thigh that you'll sit here, and Bhima said, I'll break that thigh. He said, I'm going to break that
three
thigh.
Vows. He'll break the thigh.
I'll break that thigh, Bhima said.
And he'll kill all the sons of Dhritarashtra, and he'll drink Dushasana's blood.
Yeah, I said, okay.
His Dushasan touched her hair.
He promised to break
the Patri. Okay, speak loudly.
Yeah.
So they actually challenged Arjuna.
They challenged.
I think when Jayadratha.
Oh.
They need to Arjuna to make somewhere else.
Yes, yes, yes.
So they said, we'll take him into fight.
Yes.
So
Arjuna accepted the challenge. Yeah, it was arranged like that. Yes. So the subs. Okay, they challenged Arjuna. Yeah. Okay. So it happened the other way around, that the Samsaptakas accepted Arjuna as their quota. Some Saptakas. They are the army of Krishna that he gave to the Odin to fight.
We are wondering how we can do it because nobody can stop me.
Right.
Arjuna is present, so no, I can stop four brothers.
Yes, Jayadratha.
Yeah, because the blessing of Shiva.
Yes, he got the blessing of Shiva.
So you need to take Arjuna out.
Right.
So this is what I'm saying. Okay, we will take him.
Okay. So what happened was, the day before this happened, was that Arjuna's son Abhimanyu was mercilessly killed by seven generals. So then that evening Arjuna took the vow, I will kill Jayadratha. Because Jayadratha stopped the other Pandavas from following Abhimanyu into the enemy's army. So then the next day, Jayadratha, at first he wanted to go home. He said, I'm... And Duryodhana said, don't worry. We'll put the whole army in front of you. So miles and miles and miles and miles of army, and Jayadratha at the end with all the big generals around him. He said, don't worry. And so then Arjuna had to go through the whole army to get to him. So then the Samsaptakas, as Patri Prabhu said, they vowed, okay, we will just try and stop Arjuna from getting to Jayadratha. So not that it was Arjuna's quota, but Arjuna was their quota. They challenged Arjuna to get him away from the other fighters, to stop him from going through the army. Anyway, that's a huge... You read Mahabharata, it's quite interesting. Now they just, you know, it's quite impersonal. But then everything was personal. The whole fight was very personal. That I must kill him, another one must kill him. Drishtadyumna, it was ordained that actually for Drishtadyumna, it was at his birth that he was destined to kill Jonah. It was forecasted that this is your quota, Jonah. And actually, but he didn't really kill Jonah. It was like Jonah already was leaving his body or had left his body, and then he just cut off his head. And everybody...
He'd already left,
yeah. As soon as Yudhisthira told the lie, then Jonah gave up fighting.
But Ashwatthama didn't know that.
Yes.
Ashwatthama didn't know that his father had already given up the life he was.
Yeah. Ashwatthama didn't know, of course.
That's why Ashwatthama personally sat on his chest.
No, Drishtadyumna. You mean Drishtadyumna didn't know?
Yeah, Ashwatthama didn't know.
No, Ashwatthama. Drishtadyumna. Drishtadyumna, who killed Drona.
Yeah.
Who killed Drona. Ashwatthama is the son of Drona.
Right. He didn't know that his father's life was already
Acha. Adivyambar? Yes. In which chapter? Oh, in seventh chapter. Yes, so everybody, Kunti was bewildered by Krishna's pastimes, Bhishma is bewildered. How can the Pandavas be put into reverses? It must be time. And then who else was bewildered? Brahma, of course, he described all of the incarnations. Okay, They what?
Their love for him.
Their love for Krishna was bewildering them. From the love of the devotees, then this caused their bewilderment. Right, right. Just for us to understand. What does he say? Where is that? We can look it up. Okay. Mavanpuri, while you're looking it up?
Yeah.
In verse 16 purport?
He says, he wrote there, the pure devotee knows very well how it is possible for the Lord to adjust occult things.
But it happens for the non-devotees.
Right.
Not knowing the supreme glories of the Lord Pinavi as imaginary.
Yes, he laments.
So we can see that Prabhupada brings it back to the reality of this 21st century.
Right.
What should be our Buddhist mission?
Right.
In other words, in the light of Srila Prabhupada's mission.
Yes, he laments for the non-devotees.
He brings it back to reality.
Right, who think of him as imaginary simply because there are so many contradictory statements. So when the non-devotees hear these contradictions, they think, oh, this proves he's ordinary. He's an ordinary man. This is the proof.
The point is, in Anand, so we should also be concerned.
Yes.
We should be concerned by, undoing this ignorance.
Yes. So Prabhupada, yes, he wants us to preach to help these non-devotees, give them the right understanding of Krishna. Maharaj, have you found something?
Yeah. About the condition of the being in the heart due to
bewilderment.
Oh boy, amazing.
What okay, clue us in. Where is this?
4:22:30.
4:22:30.
And 31. Indriya Vishaya Krista Akshitam Jayatam Mana Chaitanam Harate Buddhya Stambas Toyam Eva Pradat. When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes agitated. As a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness almost becomes lost, like the water in a lake that is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws in its bay. In the next shloka it says, Prasyan Anushmritis Chittam, Anushmritis Chittam, when it's destroyed. Jnana Brahmasya Smriti Kshaye, Tadarodam Kavaya Prahor Atma Pa Navam Atmana. When one deviates from his original consciousness, he loses the capacity to remember his previous position or recognize his present one. When remembrance is lost, all knowledge is acquired is based on a false foundation. When this occurs, learned scholars consider that the soul is lost.
So we're hearing about material bewilderment here. This is the bewilderment of the conditioned soul. Is that what you were... She's talking about a different kind of bewilderment, like transcendental bewilderment. Okay. But anyway, it's good to hear about the other kind too, because that's the kind that we usually experience. We usually experience this kind of bewilderment that Maharaj has given us here, these verses. Transcendental bewilderment that is yet to be experienced, perhaps, by us.
I apologize for catching only half of the thread.
Anyway.
My mind went into a tangent to other verses, otherwise I could have helped her and gone the other way.
Okay. Okay. Yes, Sankirtan?
I'm not quite sure how to formulate that.
Follow what?
Formulate. But like when we see this sequence, the first chant, the ninth chant of elevating us, preparing us.
Oh, preparing us, yes.
Now we're in the third chant, and we're right in.
We're getting a taste. Because if you don't have a taste, how are you going to go through all the nine? We got a taste in the first canto, and now we're getting another.
The first canto, said,
yeah. Yes. Yes, again we're getting a glimpse through the eyes of Uddhava. Yes. No, this is your last chance. last chance. Yes, Madan Gopal. Yes, very interesting. By accident or by association. Well, my understanding from reading the purport was that if this happens at the time of death, then you could. But Prabhupada gave so many conditions. Those who saw the Lord's beautiful lotus face and they had an appreciation of the Lord. They were not inimical. They appreciated his beauty. Plus they were shot by Arjuna. So these conditions were there. So by association. So this was an example of going back to Vaikuntha by association. Then by accident. You think it's yeah, but you can't go back to Vaikuntha unless you have the mercy of the devotee, pure devotee. Kripa City. Could be Kripa City.
Another thing is appreciating the, because when the Lord was asserting his part of the Sarathi, there was a mood of Aishwarya.
Yes.
So the idea is appreciating the Lord's beauty in his Aishwarya.
Mm-hmm.
When they appreciate that, that's the Dwara for Vaikuntha.
Okay, when they appreciate the Lord in his opulence, that's the...
In Manishesha Bhajans, it mentions that.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, that if Aishwarya. The boy becomes too attracted, Lakshmipati Rati Thakurdure, it says there that if one develops too much attachment to Lakshmipati, then that gives a body, an opulent body of Vaikuntha, but does not give a rasa-filled body of Braj.
Mm-hmm. What about by accident? What is this? By accident,
well,
yeah.
It's in 823 by Bhagavad Gita.
823.
Book 4. If the
yogi is perfect,
823. If the yogi is perfect, he can select the time and situation for living this natural world. But if he's not so expert, his success depends on his accidentally passing away at a certain future time.
But still, he goes to the Brahman. Still, it's not. He doesn't go to Vaikuntha.
It's nothing by accident.
Yes.
There's another one. It's called Vaikuntha Ekadasi.
Okay. Okay, here's the accident.
Vaikuntha Ekadasi, that's the name of it.
See, we're just like lawyers. We're looking for a loophole in the clause. And my Maharaj has found it. Yes?
Yes.
Which one is that? Vaikuntha Ekadasi, yes. Yes.
Animals.
Yes. Yeah, right, right. There's a story about the Garuda carrying the snake and fell into, where did he fall? Into Manasi Ganga? He fell into the Ganga. And he went back to Godhead. And all the Gita Mahatmya stories. Of course, that's association with Gita. Yes, accident. We should be so fortunate, huh? Right. Okay, the rat that... Okay, here's an example of an accidental going back to Godhead. The rat whose tail caught on fire and he lit up the giwek and he burned up and he went back... His whiskers, sorry. Wrong end.
Remember the bird that fell off the temple... And he fell off the temple, and he landed, and the dog grabbed the bird, and then the bird was dying in the mouth of the dog, and the dog did pradakshina around the temple of Vishnu. Somebody was chasing after the dog to try to release the bird from his mouth, and the dog got afraid, and he ran around the pradakshina around the temple of Vishnu, and the bird's in his mouth, and the bird left his body during pradakshina of the Lord.
Okay. So even a little service is not forgotten by Krishna. Okay? Lord Chaitanya embraced 7 palm trees. Well, that's association. This sounds more like accident. Shivananda Sen and his dog. Yeah, association. Okay, you won't give up, will you? The Ashtanga Yogi is going back to Godhead.
Others have no control. If by accident they leave at an auspicious moment, then they won't return to the cycle of judgment.
Yes.
But otherwise, there's every possibility that they will have to return. But it says they won't return to the cycle of judgment.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Another story. Maharaj is telling us stories.
There's another neat story. There was one god sister of ours.
Yeah.
That his mother was dying in the hospital. And so she was chanting Hare Krishna next to her dying mother. So then the mother asked her daughter, is Krishna here? And the daughter thought, well, I'm chanting Hare Krishna. Krishna is not different from his name. So yes, Krishna's here. Oh, that's nice. And she left. So then the daughter asked Prabhupada, what was the destination? Prabhupada said, oh, she remembered Krishna, the time of death. You remembered your mother. Very good.
Yeah. Association. Patri. Stories on Sankirtan in the van. Yeah. Okay, so the devotee, there was a big accident, devotee went, he shook the man, please chant Hare Krishna. What is this? Hare Krishna. And he died.
Yeah, association and accident combined. That's a very good story. We covered both of the points.
The disciples of Ramanuj took the remnants of Ramanuj's plate.
Yes.
The fish?
A fish?
Yeah.
How can a fish get remnants? Oh, he threw it in.
He's washing his plate at the Kalyani. In this mill, it's in Milkote. There. There's a big Narasimha temple. The whole lake is called Kalyani.
Oh, in the lake. They were washing
the lake. The kunda is called Kalyani because Ramanujacharya, when he had the news that Krimi cut the chola, died. Mm-hmm. The news was he was taking his morning ablution when he heard that Krimi cut the chola, died. And so he said, I can go back to Sri Ramu. Now this whole kunda has become Kalyani. So he was washing his thali after he took his food, and some water fell down the steps and went back into the kunda. Normally any Brahmins would flip out with that. But the fish went to go get some of that couple of drops of remnants, whatever it was. And they immediately rose up out of the water with Chaturbhuja Rupa, and they went back to Vaikuntha in front of all the astonished disciples. And they all said, Guru Maharaj, we take your remnants every day. Why doesn't this happen to us? And Ramanuja just said, they ate without offense. Guru Maharaj told me this story. We were in Durban.
It was Durban Radhiyatra in 1994.
And we were talking about, I asked the question about, if people are taking food for life for Sadam, then, are they becoming, human beings necessary in the next life? I quoted the letter that Prabhupada wrote to Jorgadish about ducks taking chapatis. And Prabhupada said that by very compassionate to the ducks, by they taking chapatis, then they're becoming human beings in the next birth. So I thought, well, anybody for food for life for Sadam, they're becoming human beings, at least in the next birth. And Bhakti Charamara says, no, they have to continually take prasadam for a long time and give up their sinful activity. Then by that prasadam taking a long time, they can get. Otherwise, just by one chance, it just simply increases their desire for sense gratification. It will not do it. The animals have a bit better activity. Then he told that example.
Okay, this is an example. We're having one last story from Adi Purush or something. Okay.
It's a question.
Uh-oh.
What are the offenses
of taking prasadam? She knows. Criticizing someone who has dedicated his life to taking prasad? I know somebody like that. That's Dadu. He has dedicated his life to taking prasadam. Okay, let's hear. Shimari is raising her hand. We might have an answer. Madhya Lila? This is the last question.
But
yeah,
it's explained that to think of
prasadam
is ordinary food.
Yeah, it starts like the shloka starts like.
It actually mentions the hell you go to if you have that mentality to take prasadam.
Okay. So, next time you take prasadam.
You think that prasadam is ordinary food?
If you think of it's ordinary food.
How do we do that? Food for life.
Food for life. What about these people? Well, food for life.
No.
All right, Maharaj?
The point is this, is that Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, verse 65. Prasade sarva dukkhanam hanerasyo bhajayate. Prasade prasad yasyo buddhi pariyamatishtate. That by taking the prasadam of the Lord, all your miseries go away and your buddhi is awakened. That's the point. That Prabhupada was talking about, like some mayavadis were not surrendering in the lecture. Prabhupada said, that's all right, give him some prasadam. And by taking prasadam, they're already defeated. Now the point is this, that by taking prasadam repeatedly, one's intelligence becomes awakened. And the best example I know of that was Gopijanavallabha, our beloved Gopijanavallabha Swami. He told me that personally, that by taking mugaj, basam labu, on the streets of New York, even though he ripped up the books previously when given books by devotees, he would accept them innocently, so-called, and then he would rip them up in front of the devotees and throw them in the waste bin. That's what I think of your books. But he took prasadam repeatedly from Harinam Sankirtan, Magaj, this basin ladu. Then gradually intelligence started to kick in. Then the next time he saw the Harinam Sankirtan, Hare Krishna, crazy people, straight cheeks. You got any more sweets? Oh, yes. And he gave the sweets. And his sweets had a mantra card
in the package that come and take our feast. So Buddhi Parya Vachishtade. Well, if you're passing this out on the streets, then what they have in their temple must be better than this. And he took prasadam. And then sure enough, it was a 10-course feast, but it was a big long queue to get the prasadam. So the next week, he went earlier. And they pushed him in the lecture. They pushed him in the lecture, and he said, well, they're going to feed me. I got to be polite. So he sat in the lecture. Strange people, strange philosophy, good food. Somebody asked questions. He thought that was an interesting question, and that was a neat answer. The next week, he asked a question, and he got bowled over by the answer. So he thought, Hare Krishna's nice people, nice philosophy, great food. Then, so the next week, he got very satisfied with the lecture, with the questions, and he thought, Hare Krishna's wonderful people, wonderful philosophy, great food. So what am I doing with my life? So he joined. So then, after he joined, then he served the devotees very humbly because he always remembered he ripped up the books before. So he was always serving the book distribution mission. He told me this person, Gopi Janavala, I was the last person to see him alive, too. In any case, he told me this personally. This is the one of the most amazing descriptions of prasadam. How by taking prasadam repeatedly, how it makes one a devotee, how it destroys the wicked mentality. So Prabhupada knew that simply by even Mayavadis and lectures in India, whatever it was, Prabhupada said, that's all right, give him some prasadam. By repeatedly taking prasadam, their demoniac mentality become destroyed. It's also mentioned that in the Shuddha Bhagavata song, in Sharanagati, it says, by taking the Lord's prasadam, we can conquer over the elements. So the elements of the wicked mentality is destroyed by repeatedly taking prasadam. But they have to, that's the catch. They have to repeatedly take prasadam, and later on, by the mercy of devotees, they have to take prasadam in a favorable attitude. When they take prasadam in a favorable attitude, then they get the full benefit.
Okay, thank you, Maharaj. We're a bit over time.